All right, you're the service that I need to tell, sit down. Last month, I was on a hike with people that I didn't know. Halfway up the mountain, the conversation shifted. The topic, what exactly do Unitarian Universalists believe anyways? I was curious. I hadn't told them I was a Unitarian Universalist minister. So I just listened as they explained to me what we believe. One person was emphatic. Unitarian Universalism is not really a religion because you can pretty much believe anything you want. Another person said, well, Unitarian Universalists are basically just another one of those Christian groups. Another had a more nuanced opinion that said, no, they're not Christians because they embrace all different religions. So show of hands, have you ever been asked the question, what exactly is Unitarian Universalism? Or maybe, what do you use really believe? Or is it even a real church that you go to? Now, answering these questions can be at times difficult, but you're in luck. For today, we're going to help you answer those questions that may pop up at recess or by the water cooler. What are the core parts of Unitarian Universalism? And because we want to help you out even more, each of those core parts has an image or metaphor to help you remember. So the first you can see up here is a circle. Unitarian Universalists know deep within us that we are all connected. You, me, the person over there, a tiger in Thailand, a pineapple in Hawaii, the moon, the stars, that kid at school that always picks on you, and that coworker you don't really like, all of us, everything, that we're all bound up together, caught in this giant spider web we call life, and that there is something that connects all of us together in the circle of life, which is this power of love. So the first symbol is this circle of universal love of we all go together, this circle of our faith. And the second is a spade, which may be the British way of saying shovel, I learned. That love that connects all of us is not only just a warm and fuzzy thing. We Unitarian Universalists believe that love, well, it gives us work to do, right? Amen? You're a little bit more awake than the first service, but not that much. So when we, you use, see war, love tells us to create peace. When we see hatred, love tells us to build understanding. When we see our earth being harmed and polluted, love calls us to rise up and defend her. And because your hands and my hands are the only hands that can do love's work, we have to grab our spades and get in the garden. And as a hero of mine, Miss Frizzle, says, take chances, make mistakes, and get messy. The symbol of loving the hell out of the world is this spade. And the third, you might not be able to see it, is this compass. Remember the people that I was on the hike with that said that you can believe anything you want in our church? Maybe at one time you have said that. Well, I'm here to tell you that that is not true. Unitarian Universalism isn't about believing whatever you want. It's not like one day you can decide, I think chewing bubblegum is the highest form of meditation. What our faith says is that each of us must follow the path of truth that makes sense to us. And that when you come here with your truth, you do not need to lie if it is different than mine. Which is why the symbol for this is a compass. Each of us has our own little compass that helps guide us towards what we know is good, what is right, and what is true. And that journey is one that takes a lifetime. So we have the circle of universal love that connects us all, the spade reminding us that we are instruments of making the world better, and the compass that each of us must follow the truths in our hearts. And just for a bonus, we have one more symbol over here, which is the chalice. We're not going to get into one, but we do this every Sunday, so you know some of the drill. But this flaming chalice is the symbol that we light each Sunday, and it is also lit in Unitarian Universalist congregations around the world. So this symbol, along with these ones, reminds us that there are thousands of people like us, thousands of Unitarian Universalists who join with us in our work in the world, and that we are part of a living tradition that goes back hundreds and thousands of years, that we have ancestors and that we will be ancestors to a new group of faithful and alive people. And so this flame reminds us of their presence with us each and every Sunday. And of course, when we gather together, we are reminded of our living tradition, but we also are reminded of the promises that we make in this Hear Our Faith community, those promises that make up the covenant of this congregation. And so I invite you to join with me as we say in unison the covenant of our church. It's printed on the back of your order of service or up here. And it begins with that all-important word, love. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help. And so our service today is going to be exploring these three symbols, these three metaphors of our faith. And Eleanor is going to start us off.
So this is a story about that circle of universal love that has no beginning and no end. It happened over 200 years ago in a small house in a small town on the edge of a forest where there lived a young boy named Hosea Ballou. Hosea, just like other children, was always asking questions about what and why and how. And just like other children, Hosea liked to play. Spring was his very favorite season because in the spring, it would rain, and then Hosea could jump into the mud. He loved mud. He liked to jump in puddles hard with both feet and make the water splash really high so that the mud splattered all over his brothers and sisters. And he loved to step in puddles very slowly so that the mud oozed up just a little bit at a time between his toes. Now you can imagine that not everyone in his family liked mud quite as much as he did. His mother had died when he was 2 years old, so he had an older sister who took care of him. His sister did the laundry, and she scrubbed the family's dirty clothes in big wash tubs. And she didn't like having to scrub all of that mud off of Hosea's clothes. So his sister went to her father, and she said, "Father, please tell Hosea to stop playing in the mud." "Hosea," said his father very sternly, "you should not play in the mud." "Why?" asked Hosea. "Because he asked questions, and that was another thing he loved to do." "Because," said his father, who was one of the preachers in the Baptist church, "just as we try to live a good life, to be kind to other people and to follow God's plan, we should try to stay clean." "Yes, father," Hosea said, and after that day, he did indeed try to stay clean. But it wasn't easy. He stopped stomping in the mud puddles on purpose, but sometimes the mud was just there, and he got muddy again. His sister, who loved him, took him home and washed him and dried him and washed his clothes, and she went to their father again, and she said, "Father, please tell Hosea to stop playing in the mud." "Hosea," said his father, even more sternly, "you must not play in the mud." "Yes, father," Hosea said. He was sad because he had truly tried not to get muddy. "Are you very angry with me, father?" "I'm disappointed in you, Hosea, and I'm a little angry with you." Hosea hung his head and kicked at the dirt, and then he dared to look up just a little to ask, "Do you still love me?" "Hosea," said his father, "I will always love you, no matter what you do." "Even if I get muddy again?" "Yes, even if I get really, really muddy?" "Yes, Even then, said his father with a smile. As he grew up, Hosea stopped liking mud quite so much, but he still liked to ask questions. Father, Hosea asked when he was a teenager, how can it be that our church believes that God will let one in 1,000 people into heaven, even if many of those people lead good lives? His father didn't have a good answer for that question. So Hosea had to find his own answers. So he read the Bible, and he went to some Universalist churches who asked more questions. And at the age of 19, Hosea decided that he believed in universal salvation, which is the idea that everyone, everywhere in the universe will be saved from hell. Hosea Ballou believed that God would eventually let everyone into heaven, good and bad. How can you believe that? Asked his father. How can you believe that God would let bad people into heaven? Well, because, Father, I remember what you told me when I was small. I believe that even if God is disappointed with people or angry with them, God will always love them and want them to be happy, no matter what they do and no matter how muddy they are. So our first symbol, the circle, represents that kind of universal love that Hosea Ballou was talking about, the kind of love that never stops, no matter what, even when we're disappointed or angry. That idea that every single person is worthy of love and belonging is a core idea of Unitarian Universalism. And I know some of you are thinking right now, but what about really, really bad people or people who've let us down? Even them. They have a place inside our circle of love, too. We may not love everything that a person says or does, and we don't have to allow them to hurt us or hurt others, but we promise to love them no matter what. We believe that this unconditional love has the power to help each of us to be our best selves. This kind of big love is hard work, and we generally need practice. So I'm going to invite you to turn to someone next to you and have a little conversation and answer a question. Who in your life or in our world needs some love right now? Who needs to be invited into our circle of love and belonging? So I invite you to turn to your neighbor now, have a conversation.
So do you have that person in your mind and in your heart? Do you know who in this moment you want to invite deeper into the circle of love? If that's the case, I invite you to join me in a time of meditation, reflection, and prayer. Spirit of life, we are people that come from many places. We have so many different stories, so many different histories, so many different things that fill us with joy, so many sadnesses that have dotted our lives. Today in this room, there are people who are hurting. There are people who are joyful. There are people who are wondering if they can in fact go on, if the pain they feel is ever going to go away. And so as we spend this moment of time in prayer and meditation, we call to mind those in our lives who share and give us love freely. could be our parents, our friends, the natural world which gives us what we need to survive. It could be that spirit of life, renewable resource of love that some people call God. And so as we feel the care of our community washing over us, we know that there is love within us that we have to give back. And so we call to mind the people or the places or the things that we have in our hearts, in our mind's eye, who we believe need to be invited deeper into the circle of love, who need compassion and care and healing. And so we bring them to our mind's eye and hold them in our hearts in a collective embrace of love. Each of us holding someone different. But the love is the same. And as a community, as a church, we hold together and send love towards Juan, a longtime resident of Northern Colorado, who is married and a father to 5 U.S. citizens who all live in Weld County. Despite not having a criminal record, after applying for Medicaid for his kids, was arrested because of his immigration status. And so we as a community send love and strength for all those who are fighting to keep him with his family. We send strength and determination to all those in our nation who are trying to block unjust laws and practices that are dividing families based on arbitrary human things like borders or countries of birth. We send love to all those who are striving for justice in all the places in our world. We send our care to our friends and neighbors as they return back to our homes after times away in hospitals or rehabilitation centers. For all those going through medical procedures where it is unclear what will happen next, we hope that healing and pray that healing will surround them and their families. Spirit of life, there's so much that goes on in our lives that only we know about. And so we're going to dwell just for one moment in silence together, sharing a collective intention to listen to that still small voice which lives in each of us that has wisdom to share, if only we push the clatter and clutter of the day away. And so we enter a moment and time of silence together. Amen, and blessed be.
So now for our second metaphor, the spade, which I think is Sean's Canadian word for a shovel.
Learn things every day.
The spade is our symbol of making the world a better place. Sean is going to tell you a story from a long time ago, which may or may not have really happened. So let's look to see if you can see how the people in the story made the world better.
All right, so we're going to go back a long, long time to basically the beginning of everything, to this place called the Garden of Eden. Who's heard of it? Few people. So this was this If you read the Bible, the Garden of Eden was this paradise. It had everything. It had bears and monkeys and fish and butterflies and everything that humans would need to survive. And God, this super powerful thing in the story, made the first two humans, Adam and Eve. And everything was perfect and happy and good until one very bad, rotten day when there was, of course, this snake, and the snake told them to eat this fruit, but God said, don't eat the fruit, and they did it anyways, and then God got mad and kicked them out, right? You know the story? Well, we're not going to tell that story. But the story I'm going to tell starts off the same. So we're in the Garden of Eden, and there is everything. There's bears, and there's monkeys, and there's fish, and there's butterfly, everything you need. And there's even those first two humans whose names were, of course, Aiden and Evan. And what genders Aiden and Evan are is really hard to tell, actually. But that's beside the point. So we're in this paradise garden, and because it was such a perfect place, nothing ever died in the garden. And so, of course, nothing needed to be born to replace it. And so in the Garden of Eden, basically it had everything, which just meant that it sort of was always kind of just the same. And so Aiden and Evan, because they were in this beautiful place, spent a lot of time just walking around their perfect garden. And one day when they were on one of these walks, they were on near one of the walls that separated the garden from who knows what was outside. And they saw that there was this tiny crack in the wall. And they had never seen this tiny crack before, so they went over to investigate, and they peered through. And they saw in the brown and dusty outside world that there was this tiny little tomato plant growing. At first, they didn't know it was a tomato plant, though, because in the garden, where everything was beautiful and tall and perfect, tomato plants were huge and full of beautiful green leaves and had big red tomatoes on each of the stems. And what they saw through the crack was this kind of puny, shriveled up little thing that had like one tiny little green tomato on it. And it was kind of just barely hanging on. And so every day, because of course there wasn't a lot to do in the garden, Aiden and Evan would return to the crack in the wall and they would peer through and they would cheer on the little tomato plant. It was literally the most exciting thing on TV. But one day, they came and the plant had kind of drooped over and had turned brown. Aiden looked at Evan and said, I mean, it never looked good, but now it looks worse. And Evan looked at Aiden and said, whatever could have happened to it? And now Aiden had remembered that at the back of the garden, there was this shed that had a lot of tools in it. Now, they had never used the tools because, well, they had never needed to use the tools. Because Eden just kind of took care of itself. So Aiden rushed over to the shed. And he thought, well, there has to be something here that's going to help this little plant. So he grabbed a bunch of tools. But of course, he didn't really know what tools were and what they did. So he ended up grabbing a pool noodle, an extension cord, some shears, and a spade. And no matter how much they tried, none of the tools were able to even to fit through the tiny little crack in the wall to go and help this little tomato plant. And so they looked at each other and they said, is it time to ask God? I think so. God, what's going on with this tomato plant? That's how they talked to God. They just kind of looked up and yelled. And God's voice came down, oh, it's dead. What? Said Aiden. That's terrible, said Evan. Why did it have to die? Nothing ever dies here in the garden, they both said in unison. But God didn't answer their question. So they decided that they were angry at God. They told God to go into the corner, into the timeout space, and come back when they had a better attitude. This plan didn't accomplish very much. But while God was in the timeout place, they hatched a plan. They said, God, why don't you let us go out of the garden so we can take care of this tomato plant? God smiled at them and said, of course you can leave and go and help this poor little plant. But there's one condition. You can't come back into the garden once you leave. Looking through the crack at that brown, shriveled up plant, Evan and Aiden looked at each other and without so much as a word, marched right out of the garden and over to the plant. In the garden, nothing needed help. And even though the outside of the garden, basically everything needed help, they were not sorry they couldn't return. Aiden picked up the tiny little green tomato. Evan dug a hole with the spade and planted it in the brown dust. For many days, they watered the ground, kept the weeds away. They even learned what a pool noodle was in one of the local watering holes. And then it happened. A green shoot poked through the dust and the ground. And every day it grew bigger and bigger until finally it was full and green with big red tomatoes. And they looked at each other and one thought crossed their mind. This is just the beginning.
So our second metaphor, the spade, reminds us that it's our job to help heal the world, to fight for what is right. God isn't going to do it for us. It's up to us to love our world and each other. We are compelled to pick up our tools and get to work. So now I'm going to invite you to take a look at your hands. You can hold them up in front of you. Just take a good look. And now we're going to commission them officially, once and for all, into the work of healing the world. So I want you again to find a neighbor and put your hands on theirs or over theirs. And together we'll say, these hands are for the healing of the world. These hands are for the healing of the world.
We've arrived at our third and final metaphor, the compass. Growing up, my favorite food was steak. Like big, thick, juicy steaks. If there was a food that I would have married as a child, it would have been steak. Do some of you feel similarly? Yeah. Some no's, some yeses. So you can imagine the stunned look on my parents' faces when I informed them at age 15 that I was going to become a vegetarian. But your favorite food is steak, my mother said. You know vegetarians can't eat steak, right? Well, my conversion to vegetarianism seemed sudden and almost random for my parents. For me, it had been a slow and fairly logical process. It all started with a book that I picked up at a local bookstore. The title, Buddha in My Backpack, A Buddhist Guide for Teens. Now, I didn't grow up in a church, but when I was a teenager, I picked up this book and discovered the world of Buddhism, and it just clicked. If you have any teenagers in your life and you want to recommend to them a teenage rebellion, Buddhism is a very healthy teenage rebellion. Because one of the important teachings in Buddhism is that we should live our lives with right action, which means refraining from killing, stealing, taking in intoxicating substances, or harming other beings. And for some Buddhists, this means not eating animals. Now, that was a very hard sell for me at first because, as you heard previously, I loved steak. But the more I explored Buddhism and its practice of compassion for all beings, and the ways that we are all sentient and worthy of respect and love, its practice of compassion wore on my heart. And the needle of my truth began to point more towards a new path of being vegetarian. And so I followed that needle, that path. But becoming vegetarian wasn't something that I just decided to do willy-nilly. I've actually had a few of my friends who have just suddenly decided to become vegetarian without any real foundation. They're like, oh, that's a great idea. I usually wait about 2.5 weeks to see if it really stuck. Because usually without the foundation of belief and experience in the world, changing our lives and finding new ways of being don't really stick. Unitarian Universalism is the same way. You can't actually believe anything you want to believe in our church. Instead, our faith says, follow what your heart, what your mind, what your spirit is telling you is true. The needle of a compass always points towards magnetic north. So to use the compass, you have to kind of rotate the directions to orient them towards where the needle is pointing. That process of aligning to what is true is what we do our whole lives. I started out my religious journey as an atheist, then became a Buddhist, which led me to Unitarian Universalism. In college, I wondered if I was Christian, and so I tried that out for a bit, decided I really wasn't, so I came back to Unitarian Universalism more fully. And I always used my compass, asking myself, does this make sense? Is this right? Does this feel like me? Our faith says that that journey of understanding, of building and seeing what is true, of experimenting with truth, will last our entire lives. And what a beautiful thing that is. And our job is to support each other and learn from each other as we each try to figure out where the compass of our hearts are pointing us. And when we come together in our church community, we get to pull out all of our compasses and figure out together where we as a whole community are being called next, where the compass of our collective heart is moving us into the world. And so we're going to do a little activity to try this out. So I want you to kind of get your inner compass ready. Eleanor is going to put out some directions. We're going to be a little bit of an untraditional compass because your needles aren't always going to point north. But I'm going to give you a statement or a question which is going to correspond with a different answer. And you're going to get your needles out and you're going to point towards the direction that seems to make most sense for you. Does that make sense? No? We'll try it out. I think you'll be able to get it. All right, so our first one, we'll start at easy. Let's talk about ice cream. East is over there.
Back in the social hall.
South is way at the back there.
There.
West is over there. Yeah. So, ice cream. If you're the type of person that likes fruity flavors of ice cream all day, point your compass north. If you think chocolate is really the only way to go, east. If you're more of a classic vanilla person, hit south. And if you're more of an ice cream, not really into ice cream, rather have something else, hit over to the west. So get your compasses ready and point. Yeah, we had a lot of chocolate folks last time, too. Which is great. We can all have different flavors of ice cream we like. All right, let's try another one. This one's a little different. Listen to this. Think about when you feel most connected and alive. So if you feel most connected and alive, maybe like Jerry and the Poudre Wilderness Volunteers, point north. If you feel most connected and alive when you're with your friends and with your family, go east. When you're spending time alone, go south. And when you're creating anything, music, art, things, go west. So get your compasses ready and point. Yeah, I love this is the moment where people now have two compasses. Or they waver. I love it. Which is great. It's arbitrary. I mean, it's not like these are exclusive. Let's try one more. I am most inspired by. So think about the things that just blow your mind. These are the wow moments in our lives. Do these come from the wonders of science and math and the natural world? Do they come from the spirit, God, the divine? So science, north. Natural world, north. East for God, spirit, the divine. South for the actions of human beings doing amazing justice work, caring work, go south. And west, the arts, poetry, dance, music, the creative parts of life. Which one inspires you the most? Love it. There's even more directions now. People are like, which is awesome. We get inspired by so many different things. Okay, last one, and this one's a little different. The most important thing in life is, to the north, to take care of each other and our earth. To the east, to have fun no matter what. South, to make sure only our own needs are met. West, to accumulate all the monies. Where do you think? Yes, it was a little bit of a setup. You can put your compasses down. What I love about Unitarian Universalism is that we can have so many things that are different about each of us. Our compasses can bring us to so many different paths, to so many different places, and that can just be in one person's lifetime. But there are things that orient, that when we gather together, orient us towards a certain direction. That's why I was pretty sure that the majority of you would say to take care of each other and our world is our core and most important thing of life. Because as Unitarian Universalists, we have aligned our collective compass towards that direction. Our closing hymn is Spirit of Life. And Spirit of Life was written by Unitarian Universalist activist and writer Carolyn McDade. And she wrote this song when she was really struggling with that work of creating and caring for each other in the world. She was witnessing devastation of policies, of governments, of environmental harm. And she was really trying to find the words that would keep her going. And so she wrote this song as a prayer and a lament for us to have the courage to keep going in that work together, which is our shared work as Unitarian Universalists. So I invite you to rise.